My name is Darren Hupke, and this is Pixels and Polygons. Welcome to another episode of Pixels and Polygons. This week's a fun topic. We are talking about video game controllers. So I've got my friend Thomas and Jeff back on the show. They're both returning guests from previous episodes. So I, again, this is a whole learning and growing process. Didn't give the opportunity for Jeff to introduce himself, so on the back half of the episode, we'll just dive right into that conversation. But if you want to know about him, he's a dancer and photographer and all-around creative guy. He does a whole bunch of different things. You can find him on social media and listen to those previous episodes to learn a little bit more about him. And I will work on making sure that every guest gets a little introduction for themselves. But Thomas is my first conversation. And we just, with both of my friends, we have a just good dialogue on our favorite console controllers. Nothing too crazy here. No real in-depth like debates or anything. More of just our opinions and choices on what makes cool controllers in our opinions and what stands out the most. So I appreciate you all listening to it, the episode. If you do like it, rate and review on your podcast platform of preference and share it on social media. And if you have like ideas for questions you'd want to hear answered as well, send me a message on social media at Darren Hupke on all the platforms and things. But yeah, that's it. Enjoy the episode and we will see you again next week. I am joined by my longtime friend, lifelong friend, Thomas. He's been on the episodes in the past as well. But while before you introduce yourself, Thomas, and plug anything you want to plug, tell me what is your favorite? What is your favorite in-game food item that, if it was like real, you would eat?
Oh, damn! In-game food item. I guess I'll do the joke answer. You know, it'd be pretty sick if, you know, I just like punched a trash can a few times and a giant fully baked turkey came out. I think be really nice.
Okay.
So you're just like, yeah, I get hungry one day, punch a few trash cans, boom, big ass turkey. And apparently it heals me. It'd be pretty good, hopefully.
All right. Trash can turkeys. Yeah. I mean, they usually look, they usually are like glazed, you know, ready to go, ready to eat, well presented.
They're on a full tray too, like a serving tray.
That's not a bad call.
Those games are wild. You want to do yours? You want me to continue?
No, I choose not to answer these questions. I ask them, and I never answer them. Yeah, I choose.
I know I'm not listening to the last episode. Yeah, I forget things.
Choose not to answer. But yeah, how about you introduce yourself? I know you had mentioned before that you were a lapsed streamer, but you've since started up the streaming again.
I have returned. Tom Bearer, TH0MBR, has returned. His finished up Princess Peach is currently playing in the extremely fun Day of the Diver, and I think this Sunday I'm starting, well, actually, this will be dated, I don't know when it's going to come out, but Age of Water? There's another game coming out, I'm going to try that.
Yeah, so we're going to answer a question then, on hardware-related, but we just want to just kind of chat about, you know, less debate or clickbait-worthy type question or anything, shouldn't cause any arguments or anything, but just your favorite video game controller. And I know maybe you have a few like top choices or something like that, you know, but you don't have to definitively say like this is absolutely my favorite, but if you at least had one that you considered a top tier controller of yours, what would that be?
I certainly do. I am going to go with a controller that was supposed to launch a console pretty well. That'd be the Wii U gamepad.
Really?
Yeah, I love playing games on that thing. The gamepad is like the Switch and all that. Like the controllers are pretty small; they're not really ergonomic. But the gamepad, like it felt good in your hands. The plastic wasn't all that great, or whatever. It felt a little. It wasn't bad, but the bigger parts on it, like I'd play, or playing like Assassin's Creed, Black Flag, or whatever, and just having that map down that second screen just really made games flow better. Like you never had to go into your menus, really. You weren't pausing or going through systems. You could always just kind of look down, tap a few things, and you were still playing the whole time. I thought that was just really fun. I know it did have the, this is more of a console thing, but just being able to, like, when you're close by, play on the screen, but that wasn't really what sold it for me. I just really liked the functionality of that. Not many games, I don't think, really, you know, took full advantage of that. I think it was a touchscreen as well, so you could, if you'd really like try, you could have maximized user interface on that touchpad while allowing it to get to the screen. And I think Splatoon did a decent amount of that because it was a motion control thing as well. It had a lot of features to it that I just thought were really neat at the time. And then I could have swore there's a kind of like in the PlayStation controllers now, the microphone there making sounds at you. I think the Wii U game had that as well.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure I had a mic as well. For some reason, I feel like the Game & Wario release used it. I want to say it did.
Yeah, there's a lot to that controller. And, I mean, there should be. It was attempting to, you know, push the whole console. But it was just a nice experience playing with it. I was definitely sad that I was one of the only people in the world trying to support that console. But I guess it led to the Switch, which, you know, cool. But it was still just annoying that it didn't turn out well.
Interesting choice. Yeah, I mean, I think construction-wise, it does feel well. Like, it does, like, ergonomically, I like the way that the shoulder buttons were. The sticks felt like smooth, maybe slightly too smooth, you know, but like it had like a big range, I guess. Like, whereas like the Switch, you know, those smaller analogs don't have like a full circular feel to them to like give you like a big range. The Wii U had like some big analog sticks that helped kind of that motion and that full range feel. But yeah, I mean, I would think that construction wise, it felt pretty solid for a controller, but I didn't like that about the, it was like the original PS3 that had like that glossy exterior.
Yeah.
It was like, as soon as you got like a polishing cloth and there was like any amount of like dust or debris and you wiped it away, then bam, permanent, like that spider web, like, you know, scratching into that gloss look. And it instantly, like, you know, day three of owning your system, it was like, cool, I bought this from a pawn shop, it looks like.
Jeez. I don't think mine got that messed up, but it did have the fingerprints and smudges, and you'd wipe it down in 10 seconds of the playing. Yeah, it would just be like, all right, well, whatever. I'm just not going to clean this anymore.
Yeah, I don't know what about that type of plastic or anything. It's like, it looks great, like in like a prototype or in like in a show floor style environment. Like, it, you know, looks great, but under like normal human usage, there's just something to it that it just doesn't hold up very well under pressure or under, you know, average use pressure. But that's an interesting choice.
Under the greasy usage of a common man.
Yeah. I was going to ask a little bit of a follow-up, like if you felt it was more of the idea of like the concept of what the Wii U controller could do, but you did name like a few specific games that utilized it really well in your opinion. So, yeah, I mean, it was just, you know, that unfortunately that library is not very big at all. And so there wasn't a lot of like content that could push it or use it in a unique way that the Switch could theoretically use in a similar fashion, but also opts into 90% of games, you know, probably even 99% of games being that single screen interface and nothing like secondary.
Yeah, when the Switch was coming out, I was like, cool, this is like a fully functional on-the-go one, and I'll be able to cast to the TV and do the dual screen thing. And then when that wasn't the case, I was like, why did you get rid of, like, the best part of your previous console? Like, having that second screen, like, the 3DS was amazing because you had the two screens. I'm like, everything you were doing up to this point was two screens, and now you're coming back to one screen? Like, what are you doing?
Yeah. Yeah, it was an interesting pivot. Yeah. I mean, you can't fault Nintendo, like, because of the success that the Switch has had, but, like, they unified their hardware and handheld line, like, into, like, one, but also reduced, like, what made their handheld stuff unique at that point. And then, like, you know, you would think, like, hey, are they cutting off a potential revenue stream for themselves? But with how successful the Switch has been, like, you can't really say they, you know, made a mistake. But they did definitely do an odd pivot.
Business-wise, yeah, 100%. They're killing it with the Switch. But it was just sad when it first came out to me, where I saw a lot of potential leave. And then I had my mind, like, on the Switch, like, oh, well, you know, it's a disconnecting screen. Maybe they'll turn it into a VR screen. I was like, no, they can't do that. What are you talking about? It's not going to be doing that shit.
That's funny. Yeah. I mean, I'm curious to know what the Switch 2 plans are. You know, like...
I can see them
choosing to release just, like, an increased, like, hardware spec, you know, like, platform with higher resolution, you know, just for, like, you know, but nothing, like, too crazy, not like a 4K thing, but, like, just bump it up, beef it up, have backwards compatibility with Switch games. I think for some reason that's going to be something they're really going to lean on, like, just to ensure they have, like, continued, like, baked-in success. But because of that, I also don't see them trying maybe anything too, like, super unique to, like, reinvent the wheel or, like, alter drastically, like, what players may expect.
That would suck for them, just because there's, like, Steam Decks and stuff out now that kind of take away from their... They were doing, like, the whole indie push, so...
Mm-hmm.
If they don't have any sort of other gimmick with the Switch 2, it'd be... It's understandable, because you definitely need to update the hardware to play newer style games and be competitive. But, it could be a missed opportunity to really carve out a place in the market now.
Yeah, I mean, another thing, and again, this is, I guess, strained from our original question, but the idea of a Switch 2, what would be cool is if they had, like, similar to how the Xbox can do, like, that game boost. I guess the PlayStation can do that to some extent, but it's really that kind of unlocking, like, the core code of a game, like, with, like, very little, like, external input to do so. If there's a lot of games on the Switch that just have performance issues or varying resolution issues, that if suddenly on beefier hardware, would that just give it, like, a nice, fresh, you know, reason to play? Like, oh, wow, this thing is now hitting 60 frames per second, or it's a stuck, like, really, like, sharp 1080, like, P or higher, like, on this display. Like, it could maybe breathe new life into some older games as well, potentially, if that's something, you know, they do, if they keep it, like, in canon with what the Switch is now.
Well, I'm excited to find out. I'll obviously definitely buy it, being kind of a Nintendo fanboy.
Yeah. I had an answer for the controller question, and I shared it in my other conversation with who's the other guest on this, going to be on this episode, Jeff. It's a vanilla answer, so I won't spoil it because it's going to play after this one. But I think a fun controller that I don't really personally have a lot of, like, usage with, I've always liked the way it looked. It was like the Sega Saturn controllers, the Japanese ones, like, mainly, but, like, even the US ones, it had, like, a really, like, kind of like a chunky design, and like the six button Sega Genesis style, like, layout, like, something about those Genesis controllers, and then what is, like, you know, an evolved version of that on the Saturn, like, I really like. I mean, for, like, specific games, like fighting games and all that stuff, like, having the six face buttons, like, really works. But just, like, the look of it, it just kind of had, like, a futuristic look, but it was still, like, small and, like, ergonomic to be, like, in your hands. It was always just a controller, like, I was, like, you know, not necessarily envious of, because, like, the Super NES or even the original PlayStation, like, did improve upon, you know, what is the foundation of a really good controller. But there was just, the visual appeal of, like, the cool points or, like, the design, like, points that they had, I think, in my mind, was always a cool thing. I was always really attracted to that Sega Saturn controller, even though I've never owned a Saturn at all, even, like, secondhand type of thing, just to catch up on things. But I've always liked the way they looked. I don't know if you remember them at all.
I'm looking at them now. I They really look like, I need to compare if they're super akin to the Genesis controllers. I was like, that shape feels familiar. Like, was it Genesis the same way?
Yeah, like that's... It's that same six like buttons, style, though. Yeah. Yeah, that six button like layout. Like there was a six button Genesis controller, like, you know, the default original like Genesis launch controller was just the three buttons, and then it had like a mode button that you can like switch to X, Y, and Z. But there was it was kind of cool. There was even a controller that you can find, and as I'm looking it up too, I'm seeing it, but there's if you have a Google search, a 3D analog controller for the Saturn.
that giant one?
Yeah, it's like you can almost, like, you know, just throw in a VMU slot and you can see, like, yep, where a Dreamcast controller was born from, too, which is kind of really rad. But again, that has six face buttons, where the Dreamcast slimmed things down and went just four face buttons and two shoulder buttons, which, again, something these Saturn and Genesis pads didn't have, was shoulder buttons. Actually, I think that maybe they did have a shoulder button on the Saturn one, but yeah, the Dreamcast one ended up having the triggers, you know, like, you know, you'd kind of pull and NBA 2K like free throw shooting and everything, which was kind of cool. But yeah, I always like those controllers. They're just kind of unique looking, really solid. The US ones, like I said, had like a, didn't take the exact like design. They added like a little like sharper like lines on it and everything. Like it had like a kind of a chunkier look, which I did think looked cool, but I definitely think the Japanese one has like a softer, more kind of rounded approach that ergonomically like looked more comfortable. But I'm gonna have to give a shout out to those just for just being something I always just visually thought looked good.
Nice, but honorable mention.
Yeah. I guess I will ask that follow-up then, too, just before we wrap it up. Like, what, and outside of, like, function or favoritism of it from just personal preference, what is the, like, the prettiest or most visually appealing controller in, you know, all of your gaming history that you can think?
Ooh, visually appealing.
Yeah. It doesn't have to be functional or, like, totally, you know, like, comfortable even, but just something that always looked cool to you.
It definitely wasn't functional. I thought the shape and like weird design of the Nintendo 64 controller was just insane. Like that like I don't know how they thought that was a great idea, but it was the first one that was like, oh, analog stick, and then the trigger felt really right for shooters. Obviously playing GoldenEye, it felt great, but switching from the was it a D-pad to the analog stick, that was horrid, but the look of it was just such a unique look at the time. It was definitely a novelty.
Yeah, I think that there was, I'm wondering if I'm remembering this wrong or not, but you know, you either held the middle and the right like
mm-hmm.
spot, or you held the left and the right. There was
far left for the D-pad and then the middle for the analog.
Yeah, you never played a game like that, which I felt like you could do like a arcade style like a mech shooter where it was like strafe and like aiming, you know, potentially like you could do something like that and have just limited to two inputs of like the R or the L and the Z technically at that point. Maybe start if you want to go crazy. But another thing they could have done, and I thought that maybe would have been possible, would for left-handed players, because they do that with like other platforms. They had like the Virtual Boy had a controller that like lets you play left-handed or right-handed, like dominant, like with like a mirrored symmetrical to controller design. I always thought it would be neat to, on that left side of the Nintendo 64 controller, have a D-pad that was like a button-based one, like where like how the C buttons were. And then throw an A and a B over there, but on the right side of the buttons. So, like, ergonomically, a left-handed dominant player could play the exact same thing, and you could maybe do some weird, you know, things with it.
That would have been very forward-thinking, inclusive, but no.
Yeah. I always thought it was something they could do, but, you know, just never did. Like I said, if you look up the Virtual Boy controller, it was like that. It had D-pads and buttons on both sides.
Oh, it sure does. I always thought the 64's like C buttons were weird to me. Because, yeah, it was meant to be a D-pad, but they just chose not to. I don't know. Maybe there was something in its development where they just couldn't do it or couldn't figure it out. Maybe it would break or they weren't as responsive.
Yeah.
But it's laid out to where they wanted it, or it looked like it was supposed to be a D-pad.
Yeah. I also thought it was interesting that like their C button was four buttons. It was up C, down C, left C, right C. Like, they didn't give those buttons different names or anything, even though they technically were all four different buttons. And then once you got to the GameCube, in the GameCube C stick, the analog circular area wasn't smooth. It had like set defined like eight-way directions and all that stuff. So it basically gave you like eight like hard inputs for like C directions from evolving from the four of the Nintendo 64.
I'd like that rough feel a little bit to that controller when you're going in that C stick and it feels a little stiff. You're like, okay, I know where I'm at.
Yeah.
But then again, that might've just been, you know, analog sticks on the right hand for me weren't, that wasn't the norm. I don't know.
Yeah, it was newer, but definitely it was a design choice that I think that Nintendo could have, you know, utilized more, you know, if there was maybe some more, I guess I was going to say success, but there was plenty of success, I think, for the GameCube. But yeah, it's just one of those underutilized things, kind of like you're talking about with the Wii U controller. Like, there are a lot of like things on that fully didn't get fleshed out, or like a lot of options or opportunities to demonstrate what they can fully do. But, you know, they just had cool design touches that were there if ever wanted to be taken advantage of.
Yeah.
But cool. Well, that's that. I thought it was going to be a quicker convo, but we got on to some interesting thoughts there. So appreciate the time there, Thomas. And then if you listeners continue listening, you'll hear me talk with my buddy Jeff and hear a little bit more on video game controllers. So thanks for listening and thanks for chatting, Thomas.
Yeah, you're welcome.
Favorite controller, favorite console controller, or how did you?
Yeah, I think that's cool. Just what is your favorite console controller of all time?
Yeah.
And if you have weird, like, caveats or weird certain things that you feel like constitutes a good controller.
I mean, my favorite controller, I'm going to be the easy one, and it's going to be that DualSense controller. It's the PS5 controller.
PS5 DualSense controller. Wow, you think it's the pinnacle of what they've been working at?
The cream of the crop. Years. Yeah, the cream of the crop from controller design standpoint. It has, I've always liked that PlayStation design and the DualShock improved upon the original. The
sticks being right next to each other.
I'm good with that, yeah. And then I liked the little PS4 kind of like slightly redesigning like the body of it, you know, and evolving it from the 6-axis and DualShock 3.
Oh yeah. Oh my gosh. The Dark Ages, I think. then not doing an iteration on the DualShock, just giving us pretty much the same form factor for the PS3. I was super disappointed, especially when the Xbox had the Xbox 360 controller, which is I think is one of the best controllers ever made.
That's up there for me. And the 360 controller, like, definitely is an excellent, like, build. But the reason I think I like the DualSense is just, like, the gimmicky, you know, haptics and all that stuff of it. It's got, like, the microphone and, like, speaker and all that stuff. So it can do all, like, this, like, silly gimmicky things. But it's also just, like, solid in your hands and just feels good to play. Like, I think that's fine. I mean, I know that the conversation here is, like, the Dreamcast controller has to get some kind of like mention.
100%, yeah.
But I have to just be the vanilla answer and say that just because I'm curious to hear what your answer is. And I'm sure this is where the conversation will come
from. Yeah. It's a tough one because, you know, when you think about controllers, they are supposed to just get better and better, right? Like, we just iterate them and eventually get them to a point where they're just the most comfortable. So if I had my vanilla answer, the controller I use on a day-to-day basis, for sure, it's definitely the Xbox One Elite Elite 2 controller, Pro controller, or whatever. Just with the back buttons and all the things that you did. I was definitely looking at that new DualSense. Is it DualSense Edge? Is their version of the Pro controller?
Yeah, whatever. I think that's what it's called. I don't have one of those. I feel like I'm the fanboy guy who would definitely have that, and I still don't have one.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I'm surprised that you don't. I mean, I love the ideas that you're able to switch out those sticks just in case in the future. As controller, console players, we all know stick drift is like a big thing in those things. And I love back buttons. I'm one of those sweaty gamers. I love the back buttons. But I if you've ever felt the Xbox Elite 2 controller, it's so nice. It feels premium. It's got some weight to it and all the things that you can kind of switch out. I when it comes to shooters or most games, I do prefer the setup of the Xbox controller. What is it? Like the asymmetrical setup of the sticks.
Mm-hmm.
I do prefer that. I have one in my hand right now, and it just feels so nice. And I think it's just the most comfortable controller. And, I do really love the what they did with the DualSense controllers. Like, I wish we had those. What is it? The triggers. What are they called? The triggers?
Oh, the haptic or whatever.
The haptic. Yeah. The haptics. Even though, yeah, like you said, like a little gimmicky, but I think some of the games have done it like so well. I think of Astro's Playroom. I don't know if you feel like
100%.
Astro's Playroom. Wonderful. And things like in God of War where you pull back the bow and all of that, it feels great. But if I'm going completely vanilla answer, it's got to be the Xbox Elite controller 2 for the Xbox One. But if I'm talking just favorite of all time that I have the most nostalgia with, it's definitely that Dreamcast controller. When I saw that controller for the first time, having the memory card, the gimmicky memory card that you can plug in.
You're talking about the visual memory unit, the VMU.
Yes, yes, the VMU. I just thought that was the coolest thing. I was a late adopter to the Dreamcast when it was pretty much when they weren't making games for it anymore. I just I bought it at a local GameStop and ended up buying pretty much every game that they had at the point on sale. And I was obsessed with that controller. I was obsessed with that system, period. RIP.
RIP. If that controller had like a second analog stick, it would still like stand the test of time a bit, it felt good and everything.
Imagine the second iteration of that controller.
Yeah, like a Dreamcast 2. I mean, which is kind of like, what was interesting is there was this really early on partnership. Like, obviously Sega partnered with Microsoft to help with some type of underlying like operation and hardware of the Dreamcast. Like, it's like it says in the front, like powered by Windows CE or something like that on the Dreamcast.
Mm-hmm.
But they established this relationship there. And when Dreamcast or when Sega was stepping out of the market, they actually had conversations with Microsoft to knowing that Microsoft was making their own hardware of like, hey, how about you make this your iteration of your own hardware be, it can read like our Dreamcast GD ROMs, and like out of the gate, you can have this like install base of like this library of our games. And it was almost going to be like this continuation. And then,
that when the Jet Set sequel came out on Xbox?
Yeah. Then some of those things, I guess Sega's decision was like, hey, these are the games that would have be related to like the install base and player base of these things. So like PlayStation did get Crazy Taxi and Seaman, and then
the best ones, obviously.
And then GameCube did get like Phantasy Star Online and Sonic Adventure and stuff like that.
I love that game. I was one of those.
No, that's fine. The Microsoft definitely got the better end of it. They got original games, like Crazy Taxi 3, Jet Set Radio Future, Sega GT, They got a bunch of stuff, but Xbox controller actually on it had two like expansion slots, like the Dreamcast did for like the VMU.
Oh, yes,
and stuff.
It did. Yeah,
and
yeah.
On the big green jewel that was on the controller, they were originally in talks of actually having that open up and be like a VMU. And so I think there was all this DNA of the Dreamcast in that original Xbox, where it almost was Dreamcast 2. And it does kind of feel that way. Oh, Shenmue 2 was on there actually too. So yeah. Yeah, as much as I'm not a big Xbox fanboy or anything, I do like that history of it all and all stuff. And that controller of theirs, especially when the 360 hit, like they did it right. So,
For sure, yeah.
What's the just to maybe like continue the controller conversation? What's the prettiest controller that you think in all of video game history?
The prettiest controller.
Yeah, yeah. It may not necessarily have to be functional, but like it just looks good, you know, to the eyes.
I guess for me, it'd probably be the WaveBird.
The wireless GameCube controller.
Okay, not the wireless iteration of it. What's I'm blinking. But just the GameCube controller.
Oh, okay. This is a standard GameCube controller. Okay, yeah.
Yeah, there's just a standard GameCube controller. I think it's so video gamey looking, and I really loved the Nintendo 64 controller, but I also think that's it's a horrible controller. Trying to play games on it, going back to it now, that stick is awful. But I think of just a controller that looks like a cute little video gamey controller that just looks like a lot of fun. I've always really loved the GameCube controller and even the aesthetic of the GameCube period.
Yeah, I mean, the Nintendo's controllers have like devolved in my eyes, but like they had like for the GameCube, they like had this functionality and mindset in there that like definitely still made it accessible or usable for a majority of like multi-console games, but also still like quite Nintendo-fied like out. Like, I love the little like hex notches around the C stick, so it wasn't like a smooth circular analog. It could like angle to the 8-way directions, like that clearly had like utility in like some of their games. And it was kind of it was a very neat controller, and it looks cool. It looks odd, and it's definitely like you're playing like video games, and you can see that like even in like the in-game displays for certain games, like Zelda and all that stuff, like the way the buttons were laid out, you could see the little B button was smaller on your heads up display, so they integrated that well. It was cool. I'm sad to have the vanilla, you know, Sony answer for my favorite controller.
Mine is awful too. I wish I had a really cool answer. I mean, I wish the PlayStation 3 actually came out with the boomerang console.
Oh, no.
I mean, the boomerang controller. Oh, if you haven't seen it, look it up. Listeners, it's I was shocked when I saw those before the PS3 came out. I was like, this is gonna be the controller, what the hell.
I was so nervous as like a big fan. I'm just like, dude, whoa, I'm gonna play my games with what, like how is that, why would you change that? The 1 and 2 had the exact same controller basically. Why would you shake it up? I was very nervous. And when they announced the 6-axis and then what became the DualShock 3 after lawsuits were settled, I was happy. Yeah. Rad. All right. Well, that was a fun prompt. Thanks for bringing that to the table. Controller nostalgia is always good. But cool. Thank you for the convo, Jeff.
Yeah. Thank you.